Explosions and gunfire shake Khartoum. Despite a ceasefire announcement, the fighting between the Sudanese army and the paramilitary rapid support forces shows no sign of easing. The humanitarian cost is rising. Hundreds of people have been killed and thousands injured. Healthcare services have been brought to a standstill. After heavy bombardment, hospitals and clinics are closed, leaving patients untreated. Ambulances have been targeted, preventing them from reaching the wounded.
The doctors had to evacuate all the cases, except the cases inside the intensive care units. There is a shortage in staff, medicine and oxygen. The hospital is witnessing a shortage in many things, even the doctors we have left.
The streets are eerily quiet. People say they're afraid to leave their homes. They've been dealing with stray gunfire. Others have been assaulted. Khalid Osman's mother was killed by shrapnel.
She was actually at her house in the living room, trying to take shelter over there, when a sudden mortar landed right outside their house, and she caught one of the shrapnels that came from the mortar and died almost immediately.
With no pause to the violence, Sudan could face a growing hunger crisis. Those who do venture out are trying to stock up on basic necessities.
The truth is that at the moment, it is almost impossible to provide any humanitarian services in and around Khartoum. There are calls from various organizations and people trapped asking for evacuation. For the past 4 days, people have been out of water, food. Electricity has been rationed in some places, totally disconnected.
The violence is a power struggle between Army Chief Abdel Fattah al-Burhan and Mohamed Hamdan Dagalo, who commands the Rapid Support Forces. Once allies, now the two generals disagree on when and how the paramilitary unit will be integrated into the armed forces. That's the last barrier in the shift to a civilian-led government.
They dashed all the dreams of the youth and the Sudanese revolution. The revolution that started peacefully has now become a fight. I'm disappointed.
Both generals say they're committed to the transition agreement and are blaming one another for the escalation. Just weeks ago, there was a sense of hope that long-running negotiations had succeeded. But now, Sudan once again faces an uncertain future. Rahila Mohammed, Al Jazeera.
Well, joining us live from Geneva is Martin Griffiths. He's the United Nations Undersecretary General for Humanitarian Affairs and Emergency Relief Coordinator. Mr. Griffiths, always good to have you on Al Jazeera. Thanks very much for your time. We know how busy you are right now at a very difficult moment in your organisation's history. I mean, even before the current conflict, you stated one-third of the population, nearly 16 million people in Sudan, were in need of humanitarian aid. So how will what's happening now impact on the work to alleviate that stress that many Sudanese are now experiencing?
I'm glad you mentioned that, because it is a massive humanitarian aid program. 16 million people, as you say, shut down, totally shut down in these last 5 days. People aren't moving. Supplies are being looted. We don't know what stocks are left. We've all heard about the terrible situation in the frontline hospitals, 16 down and in Khartoum, and 16 more ready to shut down too. But you know what I want to say very strongly today is this. Yes, we want to get back to that humanitarian aid program. But right now, the focus has to be relentlessly and with anger on the fact that people are forced into this lockdown across the country. I cannot begin to imagine the circumstances that those people are facing. 40 degree temperatures, Ramadan, fasting, close to Eid, food stocks running out, no medical supplies, ceasefires that don't work. There's one message that we all believe, I am sure, to take from that is these two gentlemen, the two generals in charge of these two battling forces, need to knock it off. And they need to do what they say they want to do, which is to respond to the needs of their people. And without that, what credibility can they have?
Through the 5 days that we've been following this story, we've been obviously listening to many voices of the people, because really to understand what you're talking about the problems and the suffering that many are experiencing, you have to really go to the source, which is people that can actually communicate with us through the technology that is the internet. And in the cities, they're being able to tell us about the fact that there is a lack of food, a lack of water, and they, as you say, the lockdown during the conflict is very difficult for them. Where do you see the bigger problems outside of the urban areas? Because obviously your organisation does get aid to those in refugee camps and the like. Where are the big hotspots at the moment that you're worried about?
Well, we're worried about those 60 million people who we know where they were before Saturday, and we knew what they needed before Saturday. Now we don't know what is available in terms of the supplies that they need, nor do we know clearly enough whether they have moved, which is what people do when they're in distress, as you point out. And there's one more thing. The UN has 4,000 or so staff in Sudan. Because precisely of those circumstances that you've just been describing, and thank God Al Jazeera is going to the heart of the personal stories of deprivation, we are beginning to lose touch with our own staff and our own people. They are at risk. And in addition, we're not able clearly to get the kind of picture to answer the important question that you made. Another reason, as if we needed one more, to have this terrible period of failed ceasefire promises stop.
Before we talk about your UN stuff, because I'd like to expand on that, I'd like to just go of the thought of Darfur springs to mind when we talk about hotspots. It was already a problem area, already an area that many people have been worrying about for more time than we can think of. What sort of crisis is developing there that you were looking after that you think could get worse?
Well, the worry that we had was a classic one, produced by, as you say, decades of conflict and deprivation. Food security, for a start. We've heard that the World Food Programme has shut down their operations. They lost 3 staff, tragically. Getting food to people is a constant need in a period of humanitarian programmes, obviously. And if you're not keeping delivering, people don't have food. They run out of food. So that's very urgent. Number two, in Darfur and elsewhere, it's very, very telling that it's the health system that's been the most destroyed by these events. You have covered that with great graphic and illustrative stories. Medical supplies, restocking, that's essential. And behind that is protection from people. We've all heard reports, you have reported them too, of sexual violence against people. We have our own staff have had their places looted, their homes occupied by people from these militaries. We need to have an understanding of what is available for us to return to work. And we can only do that if we can move. And if we can move, we damn well will.
You've practically answered my next question, which was about your UN staff and the fact that you can keep in touch with them as far as you can for the moment. But let's take this wider then in my last question. Diplomats are working on trying to communicate with both generals. They're on the periphery. They're outside of Sudan. The airport is closed. Nobody can get in, not even the regional leaders and politicians. How do you think this is going to play out? Because it seems to be a very difficult situation for the international community to try and, you might say, knock heads together.
Look, yes, we're seeing that phenomenon which happens at times of massive crisis like this, in which international attention is focused, thanks to you and others. International diplomatic efforts are legion. That's great. Coordinating them is essential so that they all ask for the same thing, including access to the country. Let's see what's happening in Port Sudan. Are there supplies still there? Can we move them to Darfur and elsewhere? But we're at that inflection point now where international attention and anger should also and is being channeled into practical suggestions for access, for relocation of staff who need it, and for renewal of our obligations, which is to provide aid to the people of Sudan. And, you know, if this isn't happening, then it's a terrible comment on the prospects for that transition that we all believe in so well. What Sudan has in spades, as you know, is an amazing civil society, a heroic set of organizations, doctors and others. Thank God for that. We need them now, and they're there, and we rely on them.
We'll see what happens in the coming days. It's always good to get your insight, Mr. Griffiths. Yeah. Martin Griffiths there, the Undersecretary General for Humanitarian Affairs and Emergency Relief Coordinator. Thanks for your time, sir.
Thank you.
Sabrina Shamin is Deputy Operations Manager for Sudan for Doctors Without Borders. She says they're struggling to operate.
At this moment, MSF in Sudan providing life-saving impartial medical care, but at this moment, our team cannot move. We are just stuck in the conflict. MSF confirms also there is looting in one of our premises in Darfur on 16th of April. So we don't have any supply at this moment. We might have around a week of supply to run our hospital. But after that, we don't have any other supply. There is no possibility to move. There is no possibility to move supply, as well as our team is quite stuck. We are always ready to respond, but at this moment, due to insecurity, our team is not able to move at all. Also, in Al-Fashar, we received around 220 wounded patients in our hospital. Among them, 34 unfortunately died. There is limitation of supply. We could not do any supply for first 2 days. Yesterday, we managed to do some stocking, but it is not adequate enough. We need our supply. We need safety of our staff to able to move and go to the health premises. At this moment, it is not possible. So if it continues, we don't know how the future looks like. We have a limited stock. We could run at least some of our premises, but we don't have unlimited stock. Might run out in a day or two. At this moment, it is not very clear.